All right. You've tuned in to another episode of Kayak Fishing Radio. I am your host, Rob, a Bad Backcast DeVore. I am the always popular, always dreaded, always illustrious author of BadBackcast.com. And feel free to tune in there. And also, you might want to check out YakAngler.com for all of your ultimate kayak fishing needs. Let's see, we are here. I'm here every Tuesday night from 8 till 9:30, whenever. And you can join in on the festivities if you feel like calling in. The number to call is 714-816-4727. Or shoot me an email at rob@abadbatcast.com. Let's see, what kind of news stuff do we have here? Okay, yeah, there is now 6 shows on the Kayak Fishing Radio Network right here on Blog Talk Radio. And you can catch us every weekday, or weeknight, actually. And let's see, you got Monday with Redfish Chuck. You got me on Tuesday from 8 to whenever. Chuck is on from 8 to whenever. I'm on from 8 to 9:30. At 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, is Isaac the Nothing Miller. Talking about West Coast fishing out of the Pac Northwest there. Wednesday night is the always popular Mid-Atlantic show with the landing crew, Mark Wheeler. And Thursdays is the granddaddy of them all. Sorry, Chip. We know you're not old. You're just the original Kayak Fishing Radio Show with Chip Gibson at 8 o'clock on Thursdays. And Friday is the Ease of Kayak Fishing with Dennis Spike, broadcasting from Northern California, talking about California and West Coast fishing. So 2 good West Coast shows. In case you didn't know, Dennis Spike was like one of the originators of the sport, kayakfishing.com and all of that. So you got a full roster of shows. Who needs TV when you got Kayak Fishing Radio? So anyway, it looks like we got Greg the Hammerhead on the phone with us tonight from New Hampshire. How you doing, Greg?
Good. Pretty good. How are you doing?
You come up as unknown. I'm doing good, man. Yeah, let me just... I got my own board here tonight. Let's see... Okay, sorry. That's what we're... how you doing, Greg? Greg lives in New Hampshire and writes the blog yakfish.net and is a pro staffer at yakangler.com. So what's been going on, Greg? You've been fishing recently?
I got out for a few hours this weekend. Went up to New York and fished Lake George, and it was pretty much all weekend. It was 5 to 10 knot winds constantly. So it was a little rough, but I did manage some nice largemouth. So that was good.
Speaking of largemouth, did you guys manage to see that video on Chuck's page that he was talking about? There's a 5-pound bass that got whacked by about a 50-pound snook. And you can see the snook trying to get this thing. And it was a pretty amazing video. Definitely check it out on Redfish Chuck's Facebook page there. Definitely interesting to see. I was fishing over the weekend. It was doomsday weather reports all weekend, 20 to 25 mile an hour winds. And, it was just, it was a doomsday report, but apparently due to, according to sailflow.com, we were going to have a window of opportunity. And so we went out Saturday night and it was flat calm. I mean, not a ripple on the water at all. It was just like glass. So it was great. And had some new intel on a spot and so we tried out a new spot, went over the went over the seawall and everything, so we didn't have to paddle across the intercoastal, and got out there and you know, flat calm seas, tons of bait fish, nice oyster bar, and a tidal creek, you know, the entrance to a tidal creek right there. It was great, great spot. Tons of bait fish, tons of mullet around. No game fish though. I got like one 12-inch trout, and my buddy got about the same thing. So all night. So I don't know where they were, man. It was a great spot. I don't know what else to. I don't know why the fish weren't there, or you know, we went out to a little bit deeper water, and still zippo, nothing. So better luck next time, I guess. I don't know. I'm gonna have to have my my psychologist on the phone on the show one night to talk about how to not kill yourself with negativity when it comes to fishing. Hey, Kayak Kevin's in the room there. Good deal. Kayak Kevin's new Chesapeake Bay trailer is up on his Facebook page and on his website there, so check that out. That looks really cool. Can't wait to see it, man. I'm just wondering, Kevin, did you have you gotten into GoPros yet, or are you still using the other cameras that you're using? I don't know if you guys hate GoPros or what, but I just got myself a GoPro recently, and I'm still kind of playing around figuring out how to use it. All right, man. Let's see. What are we going to talk about tonight? Okay. Get the old list out here. And let's see here. What are we going to talk about? No, let's not talk about that. Okay, the follow-up. This is something that, let's see if this, see what you guys have to say about this kind of stuff. Okay, I like to work top water a lot, in the mornings, especially. You know, low light periods, I love top waters. One of my favorite top water baits is the Mira Mullet. I believe it's a Catch 2000 series put out by Mira Lure. It's a great top water bait. You can walk the dog with it. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, what happens when your top water gets popped and the fish misses it? And, you know, a lot of people say, hey, throw a follow-up bait out there. You know, so what do you throw? Do you just throw the bait back out again, hoping he'll go after it again? Or, because I'll tell you, man, trout are notorious for missing. And redfish, too, especially missing. And it takes them a couple of shots to sometimes get that. Not every time, but sometimes. So what's your favorite follow-up lure? And I'm paying attention to the chat room there, so I'll have to see what you have to say. But, Greg, do you have a tactic for things like that when you use top water and they miss it? Do you follow up with something else?
No. A lot of times I just go back with the same thing. Because I've generally, you know, once you do it, and, you know, largemouth bass and most of the freshwater fish I chase are fairly aggressive. And stripers aren't known to be the smartest fish in the world. They're not like snook or anything. So, you know, they're used to chasing, you know, schools of bait fish where everything looks the same. So you throw the same thing right back out there. And a lot of times if the fish is still there, you can get another hit on it.
Yeah, true. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, I've been working topwater before, you know, and, you know, it gets blown up on, you know, three or four times before you get back to the kayak, you know. And sometimes they'll hit it, you know, 10 feet away from you. But I've also heard that they get kind of gun shy there, where they, you know, they're kind of, they might have felt it or something, and they might have said, well, I don't know if that's something I should eat. So a good tactic is to immediately, sometimes, and I've heard two different theories on it, either, you know, quick reel your topwater back in, you know, if it's close enough to the kayak, and then immediately follow up with a jig or something else in the general vicinity where it was, or leave it sit. Just leave it right there and just immediately throw. Now, then you run the risk of, you know, of course, tangling up two lines, and that's not a lot of fun. I'll tell you, my buddy Keith, man, he had all sorts of gear problems the other night. But anyway, I don't know, man. I was just something that that I had seen, especially some of the bass, you know, kayak fishing and stuff. Sometimes you can get a strike, and then they'll turn around and go back to wherever they were, and you got to hit them with a follow-up. So, Benito Bob says, DOA shrimp, and I agree wholeheartedly with that. Definitely. All right, we got D.D. Olson in there from Yak Angler. How you doing, sir? And who else? The Paddling Fan is in the house. Yeah, I was asking Kevin that too, man. I'm kind of curious if you're going with the GoPro deal, or if you're if you like them, if you don't like them, it's all cool. But let us know, Kevin. You know, I know that you were using those one cameras with your housings and stuff, and those were pretty cool. Okay, so back to the subject. So you don't really have any sort of a tactic for that, Greg? Any sort of a follow up or anything like that?
No, not really. If I was fishing a hard topwater bait, I might switch it up and go back with a piece of soft plastic, try to get him to hold on a little bit longer. The other thing that I'll do once in a while, this happened to me about a month ago, is I was throwing some really big hoagies and fishing them on the top, and I was only using a jig head on them, which left one hook up front, and they were really hitting them short. So I tied up some assist hooks to float off the back, you know, about 6-7 inches down the 14-inch lure, and started, you know, hooking them up that way. That's something.
Kind of like a stinger hook or something?
Yeah, basically just like a stinger hook. Just, you know, basically, you know, after three or four good short hits where they were actually holding on to the 14-inch hoagie without the hook in its mouth. So I had some eel hooks left over from a previous night trip I was on, and just took a short piece of leader material, made a short little line with a loop on it, and hooked it to the bend of the jig hook so that it just floated halfway down and wouldn't affect the action. And that's what I was catching them on then.
That's cool. I can never understand, you know, it's beyond me how, you know, you can have a topwater with two treble hooks or three treble hooks hanging on. Most of the time, mine are two. I don't really care for a three. But you get one of those, and you know, a fish will hit it, or, you know, eat it, and not get a hook in it, man. I mean, I get hooks in my own hand getting the thing out of the box, you know. So it's always amazing to me how that happens, you know. But you know, fish can be deft at times, I guess, and I can be daft. So anyway, that's awesome. That's a pretty good tactic, the stinger hook thing. They use that a lot for kingfish down here. And if you've never been on kingfish, I highly recommend it. It's you'll never want to go back to anything else once you get on a good kingfish bite. Okay, let's see. Kevin wants me to call. Yeah, you call me, Kevin, if you want, man. We'll talk about your video and stuff. 714-816-4727, or private message me your number, and I can call you out. No problem. So anyway, let's see. What else do we have here? It's getting close to the time of year here in the Tampa Bay area for what we call grouper digging. And if you don't know what grouper digging is, around the Skyway Bridge area at the mouth of Tampa Bay, in the fall, it's always a great time to be out there in the kayak, and the grouper kind of move in, and you can you have a good chance of getting some quality grouper without having to go miles and miles offshore to find them. So we're all excited about it, man. Grouper digging in the fall, that's like one of my favorite times of year. And they're not that hard to catch. I mean, you got to be rigged for it, of course, but that's for another show. And once we get a little bit closer to grouper digging time, we got about another month to go. That's a great time this time of year. You know, you go out about, I don't know, maybe a mile and a half paddle, and you're in business. Catching grouper, shallow, maybe 25, 30 feet. It's pretty shallow for grouper. What do you think, Greg? You ever hear any stories about grouper digging?
No, you got me on that one. I gotta spend more time down south, but gotta get rid of my real job and start fishing for a living to do that.
Yeah, right. All right, got Kayak Kevin on the line. How you doing, Kevin?
Good, man. How you doing?
All right, good to hear from you, man. How's the new DVD coming out, man?
I'm working on it every day. I'm actually working on it right now as I'm listening to you guys.
And, good deal.
Coming along. I'm on the intro, and I should have it done the end of this month, and then I send it out to manufacturers. It takes about a month for it to get back, so it should be ready to go by November.
Awesome. The trailers look great, man. So we're definitely excited about it, man. It's fun. So if you have any questions about it, anybody listening, if you're listening to the podcast and you don't know who Kayak Kevin is, go to kayakkevin.com and definitely check out his videos and DVDs. And they're definitely worth it, man. Now let me ask you this, Kevin: are you getting into the GoPro craze, or do you still edit with your, or do you still use the other cameras you were using?
I use other cameras. I got two of the old, you know, the standard definition GoPros before the first movie, and what I did was, you know, every week I did a weekly video report, and that's basically how I learned how to edit. Was every week I learned something new and, you know, added it and tried to learn the programs. So it was real easy to use for that. And I never got a HD one, so the standard definition ones wouldn't really blend in well with the other cameras that I had
right.
for the movie. You know, I didn't want to put that in the movie. So I'm just using the Sony Handycams right now. And somebody asked a question, which ones do I use? I use the HD ones, they're HDR XR100s are the Sony Handycams that I use.
Cool. Yeah, I just got a GoPro myself. I'm like excited as hell about using, you know, getting my GoPro going and getting and, you know, putting together some stuff, man, because, you know, it's a pretty neat tool, you know, and I'm always amazed at some
HD
of the videos.
Ones,
yeah.
The HD ones are really nice. I mean, the shots that I've seen and the guys that are using them, it looks really good. I just, you know, I just never got one, but I'm not, you know, they're really awesome. You know, the audio is bad on. That's the only thing, you have to have an audio track to go with it. But just the quality of them, the still shots are really cool. I mean, it's just a cool camera.
Yeah, I was watching a tutorial on how to do the time lapse stuff. You know, so I get all geeked up on it, and I got a Mac too to edit on. So I'm like all geeked up, like the GarageBand program and figuring out how to, you know, create songs, and it's just I'm totally geeked out with it, man.
Yeah.
But
it's easy to get into. Yeah, it is. And as a musician, I mean, you know, it's doing a video is just like writing a song, building a song. It's the same thing. You know, you have your build-ups and your climaxes and your releases.
Right.
And, you know, it's all the same thing as being writing music. And you know that. You used to play too, so. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, I'm totally, you know, like, it totally gives me that whole, you know, creative band feeling without having to, you know, be in a band anymore.
Yeah.
the garage.
A lot of people don't realize that the hardest part is actually, you know, dealing with your other band members. It's your family when you're in a band.
Exactly.
You gotta,
yeah.
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, that was the hardest thing. You know, it's hard to do by yourself. You know. It's fun and that's what I like about it is it still gives me that creative feeling, you know, and I can do it all on myself, you know, on my own. And, I don't have to worry about, you know, relying on anybody to do it. And it's great, you know, and,
yep.
you know, you don't have to go get your drummer out of rehab or something, you know, it's awesome. So, anyway, well,
you're a one man band.
Yeah, exactly.
You're one man, yeah.
What are you using to edit with? Final Cut?
No, man. I'm using the consumer level Ultimate Studio, Pinnacle Ultimate Studio 14.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Easy.
Okay.
It's real super easy. No, I don't get all that complicated stuff. I wanted something as easy as I can get. And, you know, it's a little slow, and I don't have really high-end stuff, so it takes me a little bit longer than most people would.
Hey, whatever works,
but,
if it works
yeah,
for you,
yeah,
you know, that's great. I'm the same thing.
Absolutely.
Same thing. I'm kind of like, you know, I'm afraid, you know, I can't even use Adobe Photoshop properly, you know, so I'm definitely not going to go out and get Final Cut. But I have iMovie with the Mac, and I've heard lots
yeah.
of good things with it. I haven't played with it too much yet, but I'm working on it.
And I don't do a lot of fancy stuff either with my editing. It's pretty much, you know, straightforward. I mean, all I do is simple fades, you know,
yeah.
and if I got a good slow-mo, I mean, give me some good slow-mo, but I mean, I don't do a lot of fancy, flashy stuff. I mean, it's just straight-up cuts. I mean, my hero is Larry Dahlberg, and Hunt for Big Fish, the way that is shot and put together, and just the way he tells that story, I mean, you're there with him, and that's where I get my influence.
Exactly, man. You do a good job of putting that stuff together, man. So what do you got on the new DVD? What are we looking forward to when that comes out?
Well, it's a sequel to the first one, and the first one was just straight up action, fish porn, straight on through it. But that covered a whole year. This one's just going to cover the warm water species, and warm water being 60 degrees and up. You know, warm water is 60 degrees for us. That's when it starts to get warm. So that's springtime, summertime, and, you know, late fall. And it's the shoals, the red drum on the shoals, and it's a flounder. And the summertime, you know, middle summertime at the bridge, which is sheep's head, spadefish, triggerfish, and black drum. I've got good fights in all those. And then it's sight casting in the springtime and in the fall for springtime stripers and reds, and then reds in the fall.
That's all that awesome stuff that we all look forward to, man. That's killer. We don't have a lot of those. Go ahead.
The difference in this one is that it's the instructional stuff. I show the knots, I show the rigs, I show, you know, baiting it up and where to place the baits. All that stuff is in this one.
That's what, you know, that's the thing a lot of fishing shows don't show, you know, and I think that's really cool because you can, you know, watch that, and not only do you get to see all the cool cinematography and cool action and all that stuff, but you also get to learn something as well, man, and I think that's great. Because no matter how long you've been doing it, you can learn something from anybody. You know, it's great.
Yeah, you always should be learning. But I didn't want to do it on the first one because I didn't want to. I just wanted it straight action. I didn't want to, you know, bring it too detailed into how and what and, you know, the knots and all that stuff. I made it up on this one and really put all that stuff in there. I mean, sort of showing how to tie a Palomar knot. You know, just in case anybody doesn't know how to tie a Palomar knot, I show it on there. So that's
that's awesome. We, you know, you gotta, that's great, man. I mean, you know, we were talking about it one day about, you know, a surgeon's knot, you know, and you're right. You know, you can tie that in the dark, you know, blindfolded with your eyes closed and a 5 gallon bucket over your head, you know. I mean, it's like a piece of cake, you know, when it's cold.
And I got that one on there too. Yep. That one's on there too. And even in the snow, and I only use a handful of knots and I show what we use. And that's pretty simple stuff.
And yeah, and you got to keep it simple too, man. That's important too. Well, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking forward to it, man. And once again, if you don't know, if you're listening to the podcast and you don't know who Kayak Kevin is, go ahead and you know, go to kayakkevin.com, and that's a pretty good representation. And grab the videos, grab the DVDs there, man, and you won't be disappointed about Chesapeake Bay fishing and that area, the Mid-Atlantic area. It's a great fishery up there, man. So awesome.
Yep.
And also the trailers on do you have the trailers up on your website or anything?
Yeah, absolutely. They're right there on the front page of my website, and I've just put them up on Facebook too. I'm trying to get more into Facebook, and so I'm trying to put some more pictures and videos up on there. So I just did that today.
Yeah, Facebook is a great tool, man, and I'm the same way. I'm trying to figure out how to network more on it and everything. Another one, the paddling fan that's on there. If anybody's out there, the paddling fan is always putting up interesting tidbits on their Facebook page. So they do a great job of paying attention to that. So you want to get on there and you want to like that. Just search up paddling fan on Facebook, and it'll be good, man. So anyway, that's awesome. So we're gonna go ahead and get on with the show here, and we're gonna talk about.
I'm gonna get on.
I'm gonna get on
back to editing and listening. So I listen all the time. You know, it's just every once in a while I'm gonna call in, but I'm always checking you out.
It's always good to hear from you, man.
Cool, man. I appreciate it, Rob.
Sure. Have a good night, man.
Thank you, man.
All right, we're gonna talk about snook. And seriously, I urge you to check out Kayak Kevin's site there, kayakkevin.com. You won't be disappointed. If you're into kayak fishing even a little bit, give it a shot. Okay, we got snook season opened September 1st on the Atlantic side. And I just want to urge everybody to treat them nice, treat them with respect. Last couple of years, we've really gotten hammered in the wintertime. The snook have really taken a beating. And I just want to make sure that everybody knows, you know, you don't even have to take it out of the water. Handle those things properly. I'm not a fan of any sort of gripper tools or anything like that. And so try not to, you know, you just one around the, you know, get a handle on its belly and give it a lift up, use two hands, get a quick grip and grin photo and get it back in the water and take a few minutes to revive it if it's hot out, if the water temperature's hot. But please take good care of those snook, respect them. The season opened for harvest, that is one fish per headbanger on the east coast of Florida. And I believe, oh man, you had to ask me this slot limit. Why don't I know that? I should already know that. Give me a second. I'll Google it up. I believe it's 27 to 34. I was just looking at it and I forgot. I always try to keep updated on that stuff. But once again, I'm an idiot. I'm still here. Don't worry. snook regulations, 28 to 32 is the slot limit on the east coast of Florida. Make sure you – and it's one legal fish per headbanger a day. So please take good care of them. So, Greg, man, you ever get after a snook?
No, that one's on my bucket list. I'm hoping this February's boondoggle, you know, if we head far enough south, we might be able to find some. But I know almost nothing about them, so.
Well, they're very close.
I want to try catching them.
They're very similar to catching largemouth bass. They're on a bigger side. Also, similar. I've never been fishing for stripers, but I've heard that they are basically Florida's version of striped bass. Oh, and there's a man in the chat room that knows a lot about striped bass. Gary Hansen lives up there in Alabama, and that man right there is a striper fishing machine. So check him out on Twitter, and he's always throwing pictures up all the time. M. Gary Hansen on Twitter, and that guy right there can catch some stripers. But anyway, I've heard that they are they're very similar to stripers. Once again, I've never striper fished, so it's hard for me to tell. However, you know, they're very much like I liken them to largemouth bass. Like I was talking on Chuck's show last night, Chuck was kind of talking about snook with the regulations and open season and everything else. They remind me of largemouth bass, but they get lockjaw at times. They're not always feeding, and I can tell you umpteen times I've seen them. And you throw something at them, towards them. You know, you try different tactics, and it just, no matter, you try everything in your tackle box, and you're just going to have times when they're not eaten. And I don't know why that is. I guess they just get fastidious. The biggest one I ever caught was about 20 pounds, and it was off of a pier. And it was right there, laying right underneath me at Reddington Pier. And I lowered down everything in my tackle box and tried figure eight in it and tried everything else, not interested. Put a live pinfish down there on the surface, and the pinfish started flapping around on the surface, and the snook turned around and ate it right then and there. And I thought, oh, my God, you know. And he goes under the pier, and I thought, well, how – I don't know how I'm going to get it. And this is like back in the day. This is before like braided line and stuff, right? I thought, you know, I'm running like 25-pound mono on there, you know, big game, or trilene big game, you know. And gave it – I just said, well, if I'm going to lose it, I'm going to go down fighting. So I just pulled as hard as I could, and it came straight out, man, like the exact same way that he went in. Came out from under the pier, and I caught him. It was great. And that was – My biggest snook. I don't know how big it was inches wise because I didn't measure him inches wise, inches. It was all about weight back then, and it was 20 pounds. So it was a pretty, it was a nice fish, man. That was my best ever. But anyway, yeah. There, and sometimes you get them on a feed. My buddy just recently. Another good tactic is to catch them on the beach in the summertime. We're probably at the tail end of that trend right now, the time of the year. They're probably getting staged up to get ready to head back into their wintertime haunts, which are around, you know, creek mouths and rivers and things of that nature that don't get quite as cold in the wintertime. Back bays and those kind of places. But, yeah, they're like bass. They're like big bass. But a buddy of mine just recently got on some really good snook. I mean, in the 40-inch range, 50-inch range, and he said that they were on the spot, and at 11 o'clock, the bite just went off like crazy. I mean, they're sitting there every cast they're catching one, you know, one of these big ones like that, and they caught 5, 6, 7 of them, and by 11:25, the bite shut off. So they only eat when they want to eat, man. So, but when you can get them to eat, they're a lot of fun, man. Those are an awesome fish. So, yeah, Greg, February might be a good time as long as it's not too cold, and we'll be pretty far south, so we might be in luck.
That's good.
So, are you going to Chucktown or what?
I'm thinking so. Spent a little bit too much money prepping for this hurricane we had the other week.
Yeah, I understand.
And, you know, I'm probably going to have to choose between that and the TKA tournament. That's like 2 weeks before it.
Awesome.
I'm just not seeing how I can
yeah,
two trips that far south.
Yeah, there's only X amount of cash for kayak. There's only X amount of cash for kayak fishing in the budget, man.
Yeah, I don't like that. I got to work on expanding that budget.
Yeah, that's right. It
also means less time for fishing.
saving some more lunch money and stuff. I hear you, man. I'm working on saving my lunch money for some things here in the near future. Because it's just all about expanding, and doing different things, and it's all about kayak fishing and the outdoors for me, you know, camping and fishing and all that stuff, man. It's awesome. So I'm excited
about it.
Well,
went out last month and downsized my vehicle to get, you know, twice the gas mileage, so I could afford to go more places. So
that's great.
Now I'm up to 30 miles to the gallon, and even with three kayaks on the top the other day, I got 28. So
that's awesome. Hey, you know, nothing wrong with that. Once in a while around here, I see there's a Mini Cooper that drives around with two, Ocean Kayak, you know, Trident 13s on its roof, you know. So if you can fit them, you can go, man. I don't really, to me, there's no such thing as, well, you know, here's your, outside of a Subaru Outback, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect kayaking vehicle. It's whatever works for you and whatever, however you get there, man. That's all that matters. You don't have to have a Fish in the Flats, super truck, you know, with the pull-out shelves in the back and stuff, man. That's a pretty slick vehicle right there, man. But anyway, it's not necessary, you know. Whatever, you throw it on your bike with a set of wheels, you know. Get the kayak trailer and put it on your bike, and you're off. It's awesome. D.D. Olson from Charleston. He's had snook on it on my list since 1960, but have not taken the opportunity yet. Well, put it on. Save your lunch money, Daryl, and come down in the summertime. And everybody's looking at me like I'm crazy for suggesting to come to Florida in the summertime when it's, you know, 900 degrees out. But that's a great time to catch snook because you can catch them on the beach, man. And I got to say, out of any time of the year, that's probably the if there is such a term, the easiest way to catch snook. I don't know, man. Snook on the beach, you'll see some monsters once in a while, but most of them are in the 15 to 20 inch range, I would say, and you get some big ones in there, some big females. It's a good deal. Yeah, and Gary Hansen, you said that snook sounds like fun. Those are awesome. Snook are like the awesomest fish. Once you get on snook, those will be like one of your favorite game fish ever. I can't really compare it to anything except bass fishing, which I love bass fishing. Don't get me wrong. Largemouth bass in Florida is some of the funnest bass fishing ever. But snook is just like you take the fish and you just like jack it up on steroids, and, you know, they're bigger and faster and stronger, and you're like, holy moly, you know, where'd this thing get all this power from? So they're very powerful. So all of you up northerners that have never caught a snook, come on down, put it on your list, save your lunch money. Oh, spinning fly or casting? Yes. Yes. No, I don't know, man. I don't really have a preferred method. It's you cast it, and if it eats, that's great. Now, there used to be like this stormwater drain when I lived in St. Petersburg, right? And these neighborhood kids would be like, you know, they're snook down in that stormwater drain, you know? And I'm not kidding you, it was a little creek, like 5-6 feet across, you know, and maybe 6 inches deep. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? You know, you probably saw a tilapia and thought it was a snook, you know? Dang neighborhood kids. So, sure enough, I see him out there. I'm coming back from fishing, and he's like, yep, we just saw those snook down at the creek, you know? And I'm like, really? Come on. I said, let's walk down there. You know, go tell your mom you're walking down to the creek with me. Okay. So we go down there, you know, and he's like, you know, 10, 11 years old, whatever. And sure enough, man, he's like, yeah, right there underneath those those bushes right there, you know, mangroves. Okay. Looked, and sure enough, there it was, man. It was like a 30-inch snook. And there wasn't just one. There was like three or four of them in there. And in the fall, you know. So this thing kind of, this little drainage creek, you know, goes down, and about a half mile away, it kind of opens up, you know, and it's probably about 100 feet across now at its widest part. So I said, okay, let's go down there, and, you know, we'll go down there tomorrow when it's light out and we can see and all that stuff. And sure enough, in this bigger part of this storm drain system in St. Pete, there was snook all over the place in there, and you could see them. You know, it's just like a shadow. It's like real murky water, and you could see them. They, you know, wasn't very deep. This little storm drain thing was probably about foot deep maybe. And at the end of it, though, there was tilapia, and they were, you know, probably, you know, juvenile tilapia up to probably a 10-inch fish. You know, and these snook were going in there and feeding on these juvenile tilapia. And, man, that was a blast. But they wouldn't touch anything. They were very skittish. You know, you could see them. You could see the shadow, and you would lead it with, like, a miradine and no dice. It would hit the water. You know, you'd hover it right in front of his face. And, you know, when he would allow, you know, when... you know, throw it probably 30, 40 feet in front of him, and he's just kind of cruising lazily. And when he'd get within about 3 feet of it, you know, I'd kind of just barely twitch the miradine to make it make a noise so he'd know it was there and maybe eat it. No dice, man. Those things would blow out quicker than anything. Tried everything with those. Tried them on fly, and they just wouldn't play. Yeah, you can find those things in a lot of weird places. I would have never guessed that they would have been in there, because that storm drain is probably about a mile from any sort of significant salt water. You know, it's not unusual, but it was just something. I didn't think it had enough water in it to hold fish in there. You know, why would they want to be in there if it's only like, you know, 1 foot deep max? You know. So, anyway, that's that story. World record snook, 53 pounds, 10 ounces, if you need it. That's a pretty monstrous fish. That is the all-tackle record, too. 53 pounds, 10 ounces, Gilbert Ponzi in 1978. And that's amazing. I mean, you know, the tackle that they had, the technology hadn't quite caught up with everything yet. So it's amazing to me that somebody could land a fish like that in 1978 without having, braided line and all that stuff. You know, it makes me wonder, how did we used to catch big fish like that before braided line? And I know everybody in the chat room is scrambling right now, and they're going, because we're men! We're killer! We're awesome! But no, it's definitely braided line has come a long way in assisting with bigger fish and better catches. But a 53-pound, 10-ounce snook, that's just amazing to me. You know, I mean, I don't know if you remember or not, Greg, back in the day, and you're casting that your 30-pound mono. And, you know, it's doing like the phone cord. It's like, looks like the phone cord is casting across the, through the sky there as you're casting. And you had to put at least a half ounce of anything on there just to get it to get any sort of casting distance out of it. It's great.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
What's wrong? What do you mean, used to? No, I'm kidding. Yeah, you ever remember that, man? Your telephone cord casting, 25-pound test? That's awesome.
Yeah, surf casting, like 30-pound test for blues off jetties and stuff. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you're putting that's nothing, because you're putting like 8 ounces of weight on there. And just heaving.
Yeah, that's true, but...
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it just, big old mono, it's dealing with the braid now is just so much easier. You can use a lot smaller tackle. I remember being a kid, the reels that we used to use, I still have a couple of them, were just huge. And, bluefish being able to almost spool you standing on the beach because it didn't hold that much. So
I know that, nowadays with you can use, smaller reels actually and hold a lot more line with braid. But it's amazing. The technology is amazing to me. And not only with electronic stuff, but fishing gear and stuff. And it really has come a long way in the last 25 years, God, I can remember going out there with old, what the heck was the name of that? The brand of the pole that everybody used to use back then. The rod. God, I can't remember now. And a pen spinning reel and, 100-yard, 200 yards of, a big old, pen 6500 or something and 200 yards of 30, telephone cording off the end of your rod, man. That was great. D.D. Olson says, tilapia might be fun. You can fish for them like carp. Yeah, actually, you can chum them up with bread. I did that before taking my nephew fishing and when he was little. And you get them going with some bread and then you throw one out there with a hook and it's not sporting at all, man. I mean, those things come up and eat it and you just reel the thing in. They don't really fight or anything like that. But if you want to take a kid fishing and you're like, hey, man, let's go fishing, throw some bread on there and let the kid pull in a fish, it's awesome. But there's golf course ponds all over the place just loaded with tilapia around here. And bass. And a lot of them have never even seen any kind of a bass lure, so it's awesome. All right, man. So just so the mass, everybody knows out there, October 7th through the 10th, Charleston, South Carolina, we're there, man. It's the Chucktown Boondoggle. Sign up for it on yakangler.com. If you want to come out there and we're all getting together and we're just fishing and we're going to camp and see if Scuba Stan can and LGB can put us on some nice redfish up there, man. They don't call it Redfishville for nothing, I suppose. So D.D. Olson is in there. Chip Gibson, the tree hugger. He's going Scuba Stan, LGB. I believe the landing crew might go. So anyway, it's open season on Chucktown. So make sure you get in there. We're staying at the KOA. I don't know the exact name of it, but it's the KOA campground, Mount Pleasant, if you need it. I'm going to put the... they say that they're under a tropical storm warning there at the moment, but I don't know if I think that might be a little bit old. But definitely check the weather before you go. I'm going to put the link in the chat room here. And there we go. There it is, man. If you're into going to Chucktown, that's where we're staying. So get in there, get signed up, have a good time with it, man. We always do. That's right. Yes. Everybody loves Chucktown. Boondoggle! Yeah! And contrary to popular belief, you don't have to be an ex or current serving U.S. Marine. Just because everybody there used to be in the Marines doesn't mean that it's a requirement. So, anyway, I got Isaac the Nothing Miller coming up at 10 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm wondering what he's going to talk about tonight.
Hey, folks, Isaac the Nothing Miller here.
Oh, yeah, Mike. There he is. Hey, That's cool. So he talks about West Coast fishing and everything, and he always runs an interesting show. The stuff that they fish for over there is completely alien. So what are you going to fish for there, Isaac?
Hey, folks, Isaac the Nothing Miller here. Mike, yeah? I can Elliot, I can't.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. So make sure you tune in for Isaac at 10 p.m. If you're interested in that, man, it's great. Runs a great show. I'm tired as heck. Today was like one of the busiest days ever in history at work, day after Labor Day. So I'm definitely hanging a bit.
Hey, folks, this is Isaac the Nothing Miller, Kayak Fishing Radio West.
That's awesome. So tune in to him at 10 p.m. If you don't catch it, listen to the podcast. So we're going to get to the we're getting to the end of our hour here. I'm running out of gas, and everybody's going, God, I wish he'd hit the end episode button. But I got to ask you, Greg, are you going fishing this weekend?
Yes, I'm going fishing. I'm not sure where. I'm hoping that the Hook the Cure tournament that we were scheduled to go the weekend of the Irene will go off, and this new hurricane will blow us out again.
Right.
If that does go off, I'll get to take my 10-year-old son out for stripers for the first time.
Awesome. I bet he's excited about that.
Yep. So that's what I'm crossing my fingers for. If not, I'm sure I'll be hitting some of the bass ponds around my house.
Oh, cool. Well, at least you got to get out on the water somehow, man. Everything's supposed to calm down for me this week as far as like the wind and weather and everything. We've had for the past couple of days really bad wind and rain. It's just like a constant. If you look at the weather satellite and you see the that tail end of the what they're tagged as the son of Lee, it has just been one unending rain ban from the south of Texas all the way across to the Gulf and all the way across. I mean, this thing can't be 100 miles across, and it is, it's probably closer to 50 miles across. And the whole thing is just going right over the Tampa Bay area. It's pretty funny. So it's just been kind of nasty and rainy the last couple of days. But this week, we are going to, it's an early morning fishing trip. At low tide is, I believe, at 5:30. And we're going to fish the incoming tide and see how we can do, get the early first light. It's not the best thing in the world, but we got a bright moon, so I'm not, it's actually coming out early, so I don't want to really night fish this weekend. So hopefully, Benita Bob. That's his videos that Chip was putting on the KFR Facebook page. Those are pretty cool. All the snook he was catching out there on the, there was like a river, like a dam that they were catching snook on out there. It's pretty neat. Pretty nice video. Give it a shot. So those were pretty cool videos, Bob. And thanks for tuning in. Yeah, so we'll be out there, and hopefully my luck changes. I've had an awful summer as far as fishing-wise goes. Haven't had a shortage of trips to the water, but it has just not been good for me this year, man. Wherever I go, the fish aren't there, or so it seems. So I'm hoping that the cooler weather will kind of help me turn that around. Going to the right spots, just not when the fish are there. So anyway, I'm going to get out of here, and I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. D.D. Olson, Daryl That's Angler to Angler, Daryl. Daryl's an awesome writer. Lives around Daytona, and I really enjoy reading his blog. And it's called Angler to Angler. Give it a shot. Check him out. Gary Hansen from Alabama, Striper Man. If you want to see some nice striper action, check out Gary on Facebook. That is M. Gary Hansen on Twitter. Forgive me. Got the Hammerhead, Greg Crisp, yakfish.net. Anything else to add there, Greg? You want to plug anything?
Let me see. Is there any Yak Angler, I think. So.
Any contests on Yak Angler that I'm forgetting about? I don't think there's anything running at the moment.
I don't think we have any current contests there. Doing the boondoggle coming up. And it should be fun. I hope I can get down there.
Yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait. So I wish it was, you know, those things are always fun. We get together, we socialize, we go fishing, and it's a great time had by all. So if you're around the Charleston area and you're coming in, I know D.D. Olson's going to be there. So I look forward to meeting everybody that I haven't met, and it's going to be a great time, man. Kayak Kevin, check out kayakkevin.com. Get his DVDs. They're pretty awesome. The Paddling Fan from South Florida. Make sure you like the Paddling Fan page on Facebook there. And Bonita Bob, who has been putting out some nice videos that Chip has been posting on the KFR page. Those are actually pretty cool. And I like that one where you guys were there fishing for snook on the dam. That was pretty neat. And check out that video on Redfish Chuck's page with the 50-pound snook trying to eat that 5-pound bass. That's pretty awesome. I don't know why somebody didn't reach down and grab the bass and throw a hook on him, you know, in his mouth and toss him out there for the snook. It would have been a lot more fun to catch a 50-pound snook than a 5-pound bass. All right, man. Greg, good night to you, sir. And thanks for coming on. And
anytime.
I want to just tell everybody, since you're all into kayak fishing, make sure you check out yakangler.com. You won't be sorry if you like kayak fishing. And I am your host, Bad Bat Cast, otherwise known as Rob. And you can check me out at badbatcast.com. And it's been a pleasure. And I'm going to take a nap. So I look forward to hearing from you. And everybody listening to the podcast, peace out. Thank you. And take a kid fishing and make sure you wear your PFD. So until next time, I will see ya. See ya.